Packers fans, stay up to date on all of your Packers news this season via our newsletter. You can sign up for the PackersNews.com and more Journal Sentinel newsletters by clicking on the link in the brief field of this video. Welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Ryan Wood. But this week we have a very special guest, a Mr. Pete Doherty, coming over from his After Further Review podcast to join us here on the Green 19. Because he and Ryan have been in Arizona all week at the annual NFL owners meeting. Guys, I know you got to talk to a lot of people. Came back with a lot of observations and soaked up a good bit of sun while you were out there as well. Not jealous about that part at all. And so I just kind of want to hear y'all's thoughts as from what you took away from talking with General Manager Brian Gutekunst, Head Coach Matt LaFleur, and then officials from the Jets as well. And so let's just jump right into it. Ryan, let me start with you. Also, because I know this is important to you, happy opening day.
Happy opening day. First of all, Cassie, was it cold here the past few days? I didn't notice.
13 inches one day, but thanks. Thanks for bringing that back
up. I was here for that. My flight left the very next day. And I'll tell you, getting into the Appleton Airport on Sunday, the parking lot, was an adventure. And I get back on Wednesday night, and it's like all the snow went away. It seemed like it was kind of warm.
Hopefully that was the last little, like,
yes,
burp of winter that we get.
Absolutely.
Baseball should not be played in the snow.
No. Yes. Happy opening day to you. Happy opening day. Pete, are you a big baseball fan?
Not really.
No?
I was growing up, I was a huge baseball fan, but as I got older, I just kind of drifted away from the game.
My Mets fandom makes up for the both of us. It's more than enough.
It happens to all of us, Pete. That happened to me too. And then I think about 7 years ago, I really just kind of fell back in love with it again. I give a lot of credit to that. This is going to be weird for me watching a Dodger season without Cody Bellinger. It's going to be really weird. But I take solace in the fact that I can hop down to Chicago and watch him in a game if I need to. Anyways, we've already gotten distracted. That only took less than 2 minutes.
You know what happens when you mention baseball around me, Cassidy.
I set myself up for that. Okay,
you did. Let's go
back to Arizona. Not for spring training, but for the owners meeting. Let's start with everything that Brian Gutekunst said, because he's very good at how he presents his answers. You know, at first, if you're just kind of watching it and you're listening to his tone, nothing came off super aggressive or groundbreaking, but if you go back and you look at the words, he had some stuff to say about everything that's gone down the past couple of months with the Aaron Rodgers saga and now pending trade with the New York Jets.
He set the record straight, and he did it almost like in a journalistic fashion where it was very objective, very matter of fact, no huge emotional swings or anything. This is what happened. This is what I tried to do. This is what I thought. Then this is what happened. And it's very clear that there was a misunderstanding. And I think one of the most important things Brian Gutekunst said in terms of setting the record straight was after the initial conversation with Aaron Rodgers this season, that right after the season ended, this offseason, he had an expectation that there would be more conversations, which logically makes sense. Because if you put it in context, this is a quarterback in Aaron Rodgers who almost left the organization 2 years ago because of a big reason, a lack of communication from Brian Gutekunst. How do you improve communication? And by Aaron Rodgers' admission, Brian Gutekunst has been much better over the past 2 years than he was before. How do you improve communication? You have constant, regular, consistent communication. That not just one talk, but have follow-up conversations. Keeping him in the loop, which is what Aaron Rodgers had said he wanted. And when Brian Gutekunst tried to do that, according to him, Aaron Rodgers was nowhere to be found. He said there was many times that he reached out trying to connect with the quarterback and was unable to. Effectively, felt like he was ghosted by the quarterback. So at that point, he decided, I got to do my job, in Brian Gutekunst's words, and you know, if you're getting ghosted by someone, it's pretty clear. It's pretty clear what's happening. It's pretty clear there's a lack of interest. He had to plot the course forward to make the best route for the Green Bay Packers, and that's what he did.
Pete, have you ever seen the movie Cool Hand Luke?
Yes. What we have here is a failure to communicate.
Exactly. That's there all I was thinking about while Brian Gutekunst was talking. If he had pulled that out, I would have lost it. But that's exactly what it seemed like it was. It was a failure to communicate. And after 2 years of harping on how important that was, I don't want to ask you to place blame, but like, what do you think went wrong? Like, for that to have been so important for the past 2 years, what went wrong this offseason, in your opinion, just from what you've taken from having now heard what Aaron Rodgers has said and what Brian Gutekunst has said?
You know, there's enough ambiguity in what both Rodgers said on McAfee and what Gutekunst said the other day that there could be some overlap in truth here, and it's just kind of perception of each party. Because it sounds like they were going to talk after Rodgers came out of the retreat. And then it sounds like Rodgers came out of the retreat and was hearing from people that the Packers had talked to other teams about him. And then so he ghosted them. As Ryan said in the story, he didn't return their calls and didn't get a hold of them. And so I think Rodgers probably thought there wouldn't be any talk of whether he'd be traded or not with other teams until he and Gutekunst talked. So he got upset, so he cut off the communication. It's unclear from what Gutekunst said whether he expected to talk earlier and then he started talking to other teams, or he was already talking to other teams, because, you know, you got to be proactive on that stuff. You can't just spring it on teams out of the blue, you know, at the beginning of March. So, you know, there's just enough overlap there where there's, you know, 80% truth in what each side was saying. But Rodgers didn't have to react and just cut off conversation just because he heard from other people that the Packers were talking to teams about him. He still, you know, if the communication is that important to you, you still communicate. But obviously for him, that was a, you know, final straw on the camel's back. And I don't know for sure if the Packers had expected to talk to Rodgers before he went on the retreat or not.
And remember, kids, there's three sides to every story: his side, and the truth. And so there's probably a truth somewhere in the middle of that. Matt LaFleur, from what I gathered from the two of you and your stories and what you said, didn't necessarily provide any extra clarification. He took the more politically correct route, you know, thank you for your service. Is that the kind of sense that y'all got it from it as well?
Yeah, well, let me kind of counter to Pete's point.
Okay.
And I agree that a lot of this is probably perceptually based. There's Rodgers' perception. There's Brian Gutekunst, the Packers' perception. But the thing for the life of me I still can't understand, I can't reconcile, is Aaron Rodgers saying that something changed after the darkness retreat. What he said changed was the Packers shopping him around. When he said on Pat McAfee in late January, well before the darkness retreat, that he'd heard that he was getting shopped around,
right,
and that he found it interesting. I don't understand. If you are aware of a situation going into the darkness retreat, I don't know how that situation is what changed after the darkness retreat. If you guys have better clarity on that,
if you remember too, he also said on that same McAfee episode after the darkness retreat, later on in the episode, that he got the sense during the season.
Yeah.
We're ready to move on.
So that was timeline.
Yeah. That really seemed to confuse Hawk and AJ Hawk and McAfee that, yeah. It sort of the timeline jumped a little bit there.
It's all over the map. It's all over the place. And I can't keep, whereas Brian Gutekunst, to me, and to Pete's point, yes, there was some ambiguity on how many times is many times. We don't know. Mm-hmm. How exactly was he trying to connect with the quarterback? We don't exactly know.
Well, we do know that they only texted. So they had a conversation after the season was over. And then after the season was over and Rodgers went back to California, this is something Gutekunst told us at the combine, if you remember. After that, there were some texts, but there was no face-to-face phone call conversation between when Rodgers left Green Bay and when he went on McAfee and said he wanted to go to the New York Jets.
Yeah, my point is Brian Gutekunst's account was pretty easy to follow, whereas Aaron Rodgers' account, my head's still spinning on it. I don't, Pete, I don't know if you have a better.
No, I don't. And Rodgers did say that the when is more than the how they communicated is when. It's not clear, you know, when Gutekunst, he never said when he expected to talk to Rodgers, if he expected to talk to him in February before, you know, the retreat, or if it was, just after. But yeah, I mean, obviously Rodgers is a guy who's very easy to, he's quick to being upset, you know, and he was, that's what happened here. And he didn't have to just cut off communication because he heard that the Packers were talking to other teams about, you know, about a possible trade. I mean, pretty much everybody in the league is on the trading block for the right price, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If he's upset that he was getting shopped around, which Brian Gutekunst kind of wrapped in different phrasing, but that's essentially what happened. If he was upset about it after the darkness retreat, why not be upset at before the darkness retreat? Like, what? Why does it change? Like, all of a sudden, get out of the darkness retreat, and now he's upset.
Yeah, I'd like
what
to.
What have you heard about?
I'd like to go back and see exactly what he. I don't remember what he said about that McAfee. I remember he said what Cassidy said about, you know, that he during the season he felt the vibe that they didn't want to trade him, or that they were gonna. They did want to part ways.
They were ready to move on.
Yeah. Then after the season, he thought, I think the phrase he used was that they want me back with open arms is what I remember him saying, something to that effect. And I don't remember exactly what he said. I don't remember what he said about whether they were shopping him before he went on the retreat. I just don't remember what he said about that.
He said he found it interesting. He's like, which I find interesting. He'd heard some conversations. Yeah. About that.
Yeah, so then nothing, if he did say that and he had heard they were talking to other teams, that does, I mean, what's the difference between before and after, unless
I don't know,
like, he heard the talks were a lot more serious after or whatever. But at that point, what's the difference? The question I wonder about is, since the start of the offseason, did they really prefer to move on without him? And did they know that if they presented him, or in this case, as it ended up being his agent, with a scenario where he can come, they want him back, but only if he takes part in the offseason stuff, and that they're not bringing back, you know, Cobb, Lazard, Mercedes Lewis, Robert Tonyan, if they knew that that would drive him away, and so they were just hoping that he would ask for a trade after that, or were they really, did they really want him back if he would come back after those under those conditions? That's something I haven't been able to find out yet.
In Rodgers' defense of his interpretation of the timeline, something tells me that he firmly believes time is just a social construct. And it's just a
must. Must. It's a
everything
circle. It's not linear.
Everything everywhere all at once? Is that the...
written by an... That movie was written by an Alabama native. Roll Tide. Let me throw that in. But yeah, it there's a lot of... He said, but I think you both had very good points and you were there to listen to it in person. So you kind of could interpret a little bit of what Gutekunst was saying better than just a transcript. But you feel like he knew this was his chance to set the record straight and he took it.
And I think that he not only took it, but he took it with caution, because there's two things that the Packers are simultaneously wanting to achieve here. One is to trade Aaron Rodgers. They want to move on, not just from Aaron Rodgers, but move on with Jordan Love. There is genuine intrigue, and that's the right word. They don't know what Jordan Love can do. They're not going to know until he actually gets the chance, but there's intrigue about him getting that chance. That's genuine. What they're also trying to do is recognize the fact that Aaron Rodgers is a Packer. He is on the very short list, the shortest list, of all-time great Packers. He is quite possibly the best to ever put the uniform on. And this is a franchise, as any fan knows, that cares very deeply about the fact that it has an unrivaled history. Mm-hmm. The history of the Green Bay Packers does not just matter to the fans. It matters to the curators, which is the organization itself. They wanted to set the record straight. They needed to set the record straight. But they also don't want to tarnish that legacy and have a repeat of 2008 happen, where right. there was a chasm between another all-time Packer, Brett Favre, and the organization. Nobody wants to repeat that. So it was a bit of a balancing act. And, Cassidy, to your point, I think that's where Matt LaFleur came in Tuesday morning and helped with that balancing act.
I'm glad you brought that up. So before we move on to Matt LaFleur, Pete, I want to ask you a question, because you were here through Brett Favre and through all of the drama that was subsequent happened after his trade. How do you see, are there similarities? Are there differences in how that was handled versus how this was handled? Do you see any sort of drifting coming up? Or I guess the better way to say it is, do you see history sort of repeating itself beyond just being traded to the Jets? Is it going to be several years before this relationship is repaired, or did they learn from how it handled with Favre and doing it better now?
Yeah, because there's a couple sort of slices to that. One is the public perception and how it's going over with Packers fans generally. And back when things fell apart in 08, the sentiment was really heavily towards Favre on that. And with this, from all the people I quiz about this that I run into just in my daily life, I think it's 80% at least of Packers fans mm-hmm. want them to move on from Rodgers. So the risk there is way different now than it was with Favre. You know, you part ways with these great players, and there's, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are and how much money you made. To have somebody tell you they don't want you, it's going to hurt. So these things are bound to get kind of ugly no matter what. And Rodgers will look at it as, look at all the things I did for that organization, and now they're pushing me out the door. You know, all the things I helped them, all the games I helped win, all the things I helped them build, you know. And with the Packers, this is the NFL. It's a rough league. You have to make really harsh personnel decisions. Time to move on. So there's going to be that part of it had the potential to get at least kind of ugly no matter what. I'd still call this, you know, this is a skirmish compared to the how things got with Favre. So, but it is similar, you know, that with Favre, they pushed him out the door. They never told him, we don't want you. They just, the previous 2 years, they had just begged him and begged him to stay. In that offseason, they didn't say a word. They just said, let us know what you want to do. And that's where we get back to what I was talking about before. Did the Packers really hope this would be the outcome, or were they really open to Rodgers coming back under the conditions that they were going to set?
You really think that it was the latter, though?
What's that?
You really think the latter was ever an option?
Of him coming back under the conditions they set? Based on the things I was hearing early in the offseason, I think it was at least a possibility. And for the life of me, I don't understand why they would think that way. I mean, the more, you know, when the season ended, I thought they should trade him. And as the weeks went on, the more I looked at it, looked at their cap, looked at everything, the more I was like, you know, how can they even consider bringing him back? They should want to trade him. I mean, I didn't see what other option they had, really. So that's the part I wouldn't understand, is how they would come to the conclusion that would be a good way to proceed in business, is if he would come back under those conditions, to bring him back. I just don't think he's a $59 million player anymore, and he's definitely not for them. And you to put all that stuff on future caps and for an 11-6 or 10-7 season, an early exit from the playoffs, it's just – as a likely outcome, it's just $59 million more to push everything down the road farther just makes no sense to me. If that's what they were thinking, then Rodgers did him a favor by saying, trade me. Mm-hmm.
So let's move on now to the Matt LaFleur part of it all. He took a little bit of a different tactic than his general manager, but that might've been on purpose as well. Not necessarily good cop, bad cop, but because I don't think Goody went bad cop necessarily, but you know, it was almost like they, I just almost wonder if they stood in a room before they went out there and drew straws and decided who's going to take this tactic and who's going to take this one. And with that being said, I'm going to kind of let y'all just fill us in on what Matt LaFleur said, because I know that was, you couldn't do anything live during that one, right? So what was just your general takeaway from how Matt LaFleur handled the Rodgers conversation this week?
Pete?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think the Packers wanted Brian Gutekunst to set the record straight. And then once that was done, it was done. And it was Brian Gutekunst's job to set the record straight. He was a fitting person for the role. Nobody, and I mean nobody, has gotten more crap from the quarterback over the past couple of years than Brian Gutekunst. It had to be Brian Gutekunst to do that. He's also the one in charge ultimately of making the decision. But once that was done, there wasn't a whole lot more else to say. I mean, you know, and with that said, yes, it would have been great to have heard Matt LaFleur's side of this. And call it what it was. It was a cop-out for Matt LaFleur not to answer any questions about Aaron Rodgers. He knows it. And from his perspective, he played the good cop. If Brian Gutekunst wasn't necessarily a bad cop, Matt LaFleur was the good cop. And he just thanked him for the memories and moved on. There's a whole lot more that we would have liked to have known from Matt LaFleur. He is the head coach. It is his offense. It is his quarterback. There's a whole lot more that would have been beneficial to know. I think from the Packers' perspective, they just felt like after Brian Gutekunst set the record straight, there was nothing more to say.
Yeah. I'm sure LaFleur didn't want to inflame the situation at all. You know, the less said, the better. And if they were going to present a united front, then this was the best way to do it. Just because, you know, it's a personnel decision. So the GM, that's his purview. And so that's why Gutekunst was the natural person to talk about that. And look, yeah, LaFleur accomplished a couple things. He didn't make things any worse. He, you know, by thanking Rodgers and all of that, it, you know, tries, as Ryan was saying, it kind of to, you know, maybe close the chasm a little bit so that, you know, relations stay okay with Rodgers for down the road when they want to retire his number and do all that other stuff. But I kind of guess LaFleur's biggest goal was just to not get caught in the crossfire and to not inflame things.
You know, Pete, it's interesting because I asked the same question to Robert Saleh and to Matt LaFleur, which was because that's a really fascinating backdrop to this, is that they are best friends. The head coach of the Jets, the head coach of the Packers are longtime best friends. Matt LaFleur credits Robert Saleh for being here right now.
That was the first thing he said in that press conference, you know, at the breakfast the other day.
If not for Robert Saleh, Matt LaFleur does not believe he gets a start in the NFL. There's a lot of love there, and it's genuine. I asked the same thing to both of them. How have you guys been able to navigate this? And they said that the same answer, which was as soon as it started, they called and they had a conversation and they said, we're going to stay out of it. It's up to the GMs. It's up to Brian Gutekunst. It's up to Joe Douglas. They're going to handle this. So it is, I guess, fitting that Matt LaFleur, same as Robert Saleh, who his AFC coaches breakfast roundtable Monday morning was basically an exercise in, please let me say nothing to tamper. And that was the entire motive from Robert Saleh. Please don't say Aaron Rodgers' name. Don't say Aaron Rodgers' name. That was over and over again. But they both stayed out of it. But there's been an agreement between those two best friends that not just in the public eye, but between them personally, privately, they are going to stay out of it, and it's up to the GMs to figure it out. They kind of played out that way.
How much did – because there's so much that we focus on with Aaron Rodgers and what both Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur had to say about Rodgers, and understandably so. But how much did either one of them touch on Jordan Love? Because he's a huge factor in this decision. They don't get ready to move on from Aaron Rodgers if they don't feel comfortable. And I know that this is a good quarterback class, but you're sitting at 15. Like, I just can't help but think that Jordan Love had a big part to play in this decision. Is that too much of an assumption? Ryan?
Pete?
Yeah, no, I think that's a huge part of it. They would have, if they felt about, it would have been interesting if they felt about, to know, if they felt about Love as they do now, if they felt that a year ago, February, do they do the contract extension with Rodgers? Mm-hmm. That would have been, I'd be really interested to know what their tact would have been then. But yeah, that has to be a big factor. Cause basically, I mean, in my opinion, the only reason you bring Rodgers back is if you think Love, if you've already decided Love's not good enough, then you got to just take it a year at a time, give yourself your best chance, you know, and start the quarterback hunt for Rodgers' successor. But if you think Love is a chance, I don't see how you don't move on from Rodgers this year. That's why I'm still kind of a little boggled by the possibility that they really were trying, you know, hope, you know, they really were okay with Rodgers coming back if it was under the conditions they set. That just that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
This may mean absolutely nothing, and I could be reading too much into it, but we all know that Aaron Rodgers is a man that chooses his words carefully. He does not use a word he did not mean to use. He, over the past 2 years, from my understanding and from my perspective, when things were better, always referred to Jordan Love as Jordan. You know, Jordan's here. Jordan's doing better. Tom Clements has really helped with Jordan's footwork. When the season was over and he started going back on McAfee and talking about his future, he went back to using the word my replacement. They drafted my replacement. My replacement's there. My replacement's been behind me in practice. And so, which makes me go back to thinking and wondering if this has been in the works longer than we've realized. You know, did Jordan Love's progression this past year in practice under Tom Clements, did it make them realize, you know, if they had been out of playoff contention, we would have seen Jordan Love a lot sooner. Argument could be maybe we should have. So all of that to say, I mean, Ryan, just kind of get your take that on this part as well. How much of the Jordan Love of it all do you think factored into this? And what was your takeaway for maybe what Matt LaFleur had to say this week about him as well?
You know, what's interesting about the point you just made is it makes me wonder at least how much Jordan Love's been living rent-free inside Aaron Rodgers' head, right? I mean, you don't know, but just wonder because the right February of 2020, a couple months before they drafted Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers said, "They can go ahead and draft my replacement. I'm going to beat him. I welcome competition." That was kind of the bravado. And then, talked about my replacement. And if not for Jordan Love's improvement, and he improved drastically in year three, you go back and just – and I understand that it's – I have no idea what Jordan Love's going to be. I don't think the Packers do. But if you just look at, even in a prevent defense, what he did against Philadelphia compared to what he did against Kansas City, he was a totally different guy. Mm-hmm. Matt LaFleur had a lot more to say about Jordan Love naturally than Brian Gutekunst. It's his offense. It's his quarterback. And he did everything he could to manage expectations, which was probably wise. I know that there's some people around the Packers that might have had, you know, wanted Matt LaFleur to come and stump speech for Jordan Love and build him up. And it was the opposite approach that Matt LaFleur took. But Matt LaFleur knows that it's going to be a hard year for Jordan Love. He's going to go through his slumps, his rookie growing pains. And I know he's not a rookie, but he's a first-time starter. Might as well be the same thing. He's going to go through that process that every young quarterback goes through as a first-time starter. And what will determine whether or not he's a success is whether or not he survives the fire. And don't make the fire hotter if you're Matt LaFleur by stumping for the guy. Go out and say, he's not Aaron Rodgers right now. Now, I think Jordan Love's a better athlete right now than Aaron Rodgers, but he's not a better quarterback right now than Aaron Rodgers. He's got to get there. It's going to be a progress. It's going to be a process. And he's not gone through the process yet. So I think that what, you know, in managing expectations, Matt LaFleur also was very realistic about the fact that 2023 is going to be a classroom on the field for Jordan Love.
Yeah. And he even said that in those exact words this week, or you know, that we cannot expect him to be Aaron Rodgers this first year or something along those lines.
Yeah.
which can sound like a slight when you read it at first, but I don't think it was that meant that way at all.
Aaron Rodgers wasn't Aaron Rodgers in 2008. It took 29 games for him to have a plus 500 record in this league. They were 6-10. Now, Pete, I know that, you know, I'm talking with you, you could see something there. It wasn't like it was a shock once he started playing that he was good. Like, you could see that he has potential. But he wasn't four-time MVP, future first ballot Hall of Famer Aaron Rodgers in 2008. He had to go through the fire, too.
No, if they had known, if they had had any inkling of what he was going to be, they never draft Brian Brown in the second round, you know, 3 months before Rodgers is going to start his first game. I mean, that just – they wouldn't have done that. And even after that first year, you know, it was like, okay, you know, that was pretty good. You know, maybe this guy will be okay. There was still – I mean, nobody was predicting a Hall of Fame for him after that first year. So, you know, Love could go out and they could be 6-11 and he still – could be a guy who looks good enough where they'll give him a contract extension. You know, Rodgers, and back to your original point, Cassidy, Rodgers did say he got the vibe during the season that they wanted to move on, and maybe that was based on what he saw in practice and then how Love played against the Eagles.
Let me jump to something Ryan said real quick here, because, Pete, I want to get your opinion. I've asked Spoon this on the podcast as well, so I want to get your insight as well. You know, Ryan said Aaron Rodgers was not even Aaron Rodgers in 2008, but you could see something to know that he would be good. What did you see from someone who had a front row view to it? What did you see? And with that in mind, what would you want to see in Jordan this year that would give you confidence to think maybe down the road he could become the next great Green Bay Packers quarterback?
So you're going back to 08. You know, that's a long time ago.
And no, it wasn't, Pete, okay? We're not playing this game.
And things are, I mean, because it's so easy for revisionist history. I mean, I've gone around and asked a couple reporters, you know, so what did you think of Rodgers? You know, and a couple of them have told me, oh, I thought he was going to be really good. And I'm like, I asked everybody about this back at the time, and I don't remember anybody ever telling me, oh, I think Aaron Rodgers, like, first couple seasons, Aaron Rodgers is going to be good. So, you know, anybody listening, be wary of what I say here, even, because that's a long time ago, and it is all murky. I just vaguely remember, I mean, they won their first two games, mm-hmm. and I just remember, I don't remember being wowed by the guy, but I remember thinking, you know, because up until 08, I thought this, or at least until he played against the Cowboys in that game in 07, I thought this guy will never be anything more than a backup in this league. And then after he played against the Cowboys, it was like, you know, that was pretty decent. So maybe there's something more there. And the way he played in 08, the first half of the season, they were in every game. They scored their share of points. McCarthy really had training wheels on him. I think it was against Minnesota where they got the ball of the final possession and they had, you know, a field goal would win it for them. And once they got over the 50-yard line, McCarthy wouldn't even let him throw the ball, and Mason Crosby ended up donking a 54-yard field goal or 52-yard field goal off one of the uprights. So he really had the training wheels on. But I just remember thinking, you know, he moved the ball some. They were in all their games. They lost close games. He threw some bad interceptions that cost them some games. But overall, it was like, you know, yeah, there's something to work with here. I could see this guy being their quarterback for a while and them doing okay. It really wasn't until, you know, late in 09 where you thought maybe he was pretty good. And it really wasn't until Atlanta in 10 where it was like, okay, this guy is something.
Can I add something to that real quick? In a quarterback's first year, which as to your point, Jordan Love's not a rookie, but it's his first year starting. Presumably, he'll be the starter.
Almost definitely.
I don't mind a first-year quarterback coming out and throwing a bunch of interceptions. Figure out what you can get away with. You're not going to the Super Bowl your first year. I mean, if you did, that'd be incredible. But, like, come out, throw a bunch of interceptions. Figure out where your windows are. Figure out how tight they're closing. And how much time you have. Make those mistakes in your first year so that you don't make them in your second year. Mm-hmm. So I'm okay with that.
Test the boundaries. That's how you learn.
Exactly. Ryan, I talked about this. What was it, 13 interceptions in Rodgers' first year? You know, for him especially, looking at the arc of his career, that was a huge number. So, yeah, he's going to throw. He's going to lose some games. I mean, that's Jordan Love is going to lose the Packers some games this season. I mean, there's no getting around that.
What did Trevor Lawrence throw? How many interceptions his rookie year? It was like something ridiculous. I think he passed Peyton Manning's record.
Peyton Manning threw a lot of interceptions his rookie year.
Let's see. Trevor Lawrence threw 18 interceptions his rookie year. And this past year, he had them two games out of the Super Bowl. Peyton Manning threw a bunch his rookie year. So, I mean, I'm okay with that. Figure out what you can and can't do. And that's part of it, is learning on the job. Okay, let's go back to Rodgers. We took a little detour down Love Lane. The thing everyone wants to know, when will this deal get done and what will it come down to? I think at this point, everybody's guess is as good as someone else's. But after hearing what Brian Gutekunst, Matt LaFleur, Joe Douglas, Robert Saleh all had to say this week, let's start with this. Let's start with the win. Just give me a time range. Ryan, when do you think this happens?
What's the date of the first round of the NFL draft?
27th, I believe.
All right. So anytime between April 25th and April 27th, early in the day. That'd be my guess.
So the 2 days, but the 48 hours before the draft starts.
That'd be my guess.
Pete?
That's a pretty precise window. I mean, I'm thinking.
Just throwing stuff against the wall here, Pete.
I'm thinking, I mean, anytime, you know, before the draft, if you had to bet before draft or after draft, I would bet heavily before draft.
And explain this for those listening, because I know a lot of dates have gotten thrown out. So just kind of break it down for everybody. The deadline for if you have to get a trade done, the deadline is not until September, technically, correct? But the arbitrary deadline is the draft if you want to get any sort of picks for this year.
Well, the option bonus isn't due until week one for Aaron Rodgers. And so that's the hardest deadline. The Packers are not going to pay the $58.3 million.
That would be September 10th.
Yeah, so week one. If he's is it cut down day, Pete? If he's on their 53-man roster, then they owe him the option bonus.
I can't remember if it's cut. I thought it was first game.
Maybe it's first
game. But then if it's first game, I don't know if it's – is it the day of the first game, the day before?
Or, like, would it be that Thursday before when week one technically starts?
Yeah, or Friday if that's the normal payday. I've never seen anywhere the answer to that precise because it's – I guess because nobody thinks it's actually going to go that far. But
please don't let it happen. No, please. Please be much sooner than that.
So that's the actual drop-dead deadline. But as we said, if you want anything for this year's draft, which you want to, because you don't even know if he's going to be on the Jets roster next year, your deadline is April 27th at 7 p.m.
And you know what's not a deadline is June 1st. Like I keep reading this, like June 1st matters for the cap. If it's post June 1st, you're taking on a whole lot less cap. It's very impactful for the cap. But it's not like June 1st comes around or May 31st comes around or June 2nd and, oh, this is a deadline. We have to get it done now. No, you don't. It just it matters for the cap. The draft is a deadline. And Brian Gutekunst basically said in Phoenix, if it's not done by the draft, price goes up. It's going up. So that's a deadline.
Yesterday's price is not today's price.
If the Jets were really gung-ho and believed that Aaron Rodgers was going to participate in their offseason program, April 17th. Would be a deadline, but they're not. So that's not a deadline.
Their starts.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Another one. This would not be a hard deadline at all, but a soft deadline might be the start of OTAs. I mean, they still, you know, no matter what I think it was Saleh who was saying might have been Douglas. You know, nah, we don't need him for the offseason stuff.
That was Saleh. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. They need him on the field with this new receiver so they can all get to know the timing and everything. It's not Rodgers knowing the offense that's the issue. It's everybody else and him getting in sync with everybody else. So they very much prefer to get him done no matter what they say.
The New York Jets offseason program starts on April 17th. That's also when Packers starts. And the Jets OTAs start on May 22nd. Mandatory minicamp is June 13th.
So I'm trying to remember how that exactly goes, but I think it's the first, it's either the first week or 2 weeks is just physical conditioning and then classroom work. And then the next couple weeks are position group work. And then on the field and classroom. And then the final 3 weeks are the full team practices and classroom stuff. So they'd probably at least want him there, if at all possible, when the on-field work, the position group stuff starts, at least that, because then he's throwing the guys in and running routes. But for sure, for the OTAs, I would think they'd want him, you know, want him for that.
Pete, did you just answer the who has the leverage question in a roundabout way? Because here's why. Here's the earlier deadline then, and I'm with you. Like, for Robert Saleh, the head coach, to be like, yeah, we don't need this new quarterback to be anywhere near our offense because he knows Nathaniel Hackett's name. He doesn't have to work with his new receivers. That was baloney. But the Packers' deadline is sooner, being the draft. And you know that if it doesn't get done before then, the price is going up. And the Jets need Aaron Rodgers to at least practice with his new team a little bit come May. So that would seem to me to be that, you know, because if you miss that first deadline window and you get a trade done sometime in early May, the Packers are going to be wanting more. They're going to be asking more.
Yeah, the one leverage that what hurts the Packers is they cannot get stuck with this contract. For right. This guy, for him coming back now, that's just a disaster in so many ways, locker room wise, everything. But they just can't get stuck with this contract. And life is unpredictable. And the longer this thing goes, especially once you get after the draft, if something blows the trade up, you know, then they're all of a sudden in this really tight spot. So how long do you want to hold out for a little extra compensation before that risk starts getting a little too steep for you? My guess is what will happen is Woody Johnson is the one who wants this to happen most, you know, from the Jets perspective. He's 75, on the team for 23 years. They've never been to a Super Bowl. Clock's ticking. He wants to win now. He's got a good team. Thinks Rodgers can get him over the hump. So he wants this to happen. I'm guessing sometime in the next few weeks, he finally just says, you know, increase the offer a little bit. Let's just get this done. And maybe the Jets increase it just enough to get Gutekunst to bite. So my guess is that's how this thing will end up getting finished.
That's incredibly ironic, just to decide that Woody Johnson is pinning all his hopes and dreams and futures on Aaron Rodgers. Do you know who Woody Johnson is the heir of?
Yes, the Johnson & Johnson Company.
Yes.
That is funny.
No, what was the headline? was it the New York Post when they met with him and it looked like, you know, there was going to be a deal, shot in the arm, something like that. Jets get a shot in the arm.
Well, if you don't need him for your off-season program, you probably don't care about much else.
Yeah. So to just sum up everything y'all just said, we still think it happens the week of the draft. What is a fair compensation at this point?
Well, they're not going to get any first-round pick that comes without a condition.
And so it sounds like they're okay with that at this point.
Brian Gutekunst said straight up, it's not necessary. If it's not necessary, that means it's not necessary. So that's not going to happen.
Tip his hand a little bit to the Jets to say that publicly?
I'm sure he said nothing that the Jets didn't already know.
Okay.
I'm sure that he's communicated the same. And I think Brian Gutekunst wanted that message out publicly that, look, we're not crazy.
Yeah.
We're not holding out for a first-round pick. We're
not holding this deal up for something that's not going to happen.
But he wants premier picks for a premier player. He said picks. He said two. I think that you're going to see a 2024 conditional. Pete, I know we talked about in Phoenix, you know, having some 2025 protection come back if Aaron Rodgers gets past the 2024 draft and says, I'm not going to play in 2024, which is possible. So I could see the Packers not wanting to do that. I wouldn't want to do that if I was the Packers, but I can see the Jets wanting to do that. Could see that holding it up. As far as, you know, this year, I think the Packers would be doing cartwheels if they got both of those second-round picks from the Jets. And in a trade with
– 43?
Yeah. What is it, 42 and 43?
Yes.
When when you're trading with someone who is motivated to get it done, you don't want them going away from that trade doing cartwheels. And the Packers would be doing cartwheels with both second-round picks. I think you see maybe one of those second-round picks in 2023 and a conditional that has a lot of variance built in for 2024.
I can see that. Pete?
Yeah, I mean, I just got done doing a chat, and I think when Ryan and I did the Facebook's lives when we were down there, just my best wild guess is a 2 this year and a conditional 1 next year, the condition being that Rodgers plays in 24. I think the Packers would be doing – that would be fine. If I were the Packers, I'd be fine with that. And if I were the Jets, if you get 2 years of the guy, I still if I were the Packers, I'd actually be very fine with that. I think the Packers would be getting the better end of the deal because the one thing is they're getting this awful contract taken off their hands.
And they need to see what Jordan Love can do. You've had a first-round pick that you traded up for. Wait 3 years. It is time to see what you have there in terms of plotting out the future course of your franchise.
Do you try to package Corey Davis with that?
I don't see how that works financially.
Yeah, the cap.
He's got a
Carl Wilson.
What's Davis's? What's his contract this year?
He has a cap hit of 11.2 this year.
Well, what's the because some of that the Jets will be stuck with no matter what. But so what's his base salary and roster bonus?
2023, his base salary is 10.5.
Yeah, so even if the Packers, once they got him, did a restructure, so they, you know, a max restructure with all the void years and everything, you're still talking, you know, a $5 million cap hit. I don't see how they can afford any player for a $5 million cap hit with where their cap is now. They just have such minimal cap room and not a lot of maneuvering room. So I don't see how, just, you know, outside looking in, glancing at it, you know, several times this offseason, I don't see how he's part of it.
That's a bad position to be in if a $5 million cap hit is going to ruin you.
Yeah.
Yep. Another reason why it's time to move on, because yes, they add $8.7 million to the cap if they trade before June 1st, Aaron Rodgers. But then you're done. The accelerator's off the books in 2024. You can start the process of getting your cap under control, which historically for the Packers has been in wonderful shape. But since COVID, it's been a problem. And they need to start that process of getting their cap back together.
Yeah. Spending money they don't have. Guys, before we wrap up, I'm just going to kind of give you an opportunity to, if there was anything else that came out of Arizona that kind of stood out to you. You know, we talked so much about Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers. Was there talk about Adrian Amos, Mason Crosby? Actually, Mason Crosby, I do want to bring that up because was there any sort of conversation around some of these free agents that their future is still up in the air?
Yeah, I mean, as we've been saying all offseason, Mason Crosby's most likely attached to Aaron Rodgers coming back or not. With him not coming back, it sure sounds like from Brian Gutekunst that's not going to happen. I would be very surprised if Mason Crosby was back.
Pete, was there any other players that came up in conversation that kind of stood out to you?
Yeah, I was really curious what they were going to do with Douglas and Savage.
Yes.
And I wasn't sure LaFleur would say, because a lot of times in the offseason they don't. They make you just wait till OTAs in the practice field, because they won't, like, even at the draft, they won't answer those
Do questions. You remember during the season I asked LaFleur one day about, like, would he – because someone had gotten hurt, and I was like, are you going to go back to your rotation you had earlier in the year with Douglas outside? And he's like, you want me to give away our game plan? I'm like, no, I'm asking if you're going to put a guy back where he's been this whole time. Anyways, yes, I was surprised he said that too. Sorry.
Yeah, and in the offseason, you're thinking, well, you know, teams are going to know it by the time the season starts, but a lot of times they'll just keep this stuff secret anyway. But he said Savage is going back to safety. Douglas is not moving to safety, but he's also – they're taking him out of the slot, and so he's going to be on the outside. And Nixon's getting first crack is the likely nickel guy.
Until he gets put on offense, right?
I wonder if they'll really do that. That's if they really want him to be their – both their return guy and if he's their full-time nickel guy, I just can't – I can't imagine they'd mess around sticking him on offense, but maybe they would.
You know, the other part, too, it's going to be really interesting when Eric Stokes is able to come back. That's going to be interesting.
Which might be longer rather than sooner.
Might be. We'll have to see. It's going to be, you know, and even if he, like, he's a guy that needs offseason work because he was not good before the injury. He needs offseason work, and it sure sounds like he's not going to get a lot of that. So that's something to keep an eye on.
So much defense to talk about. And, of course, we're spending all our time on Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love. Understandably so. When a deal does come around, we will have full wall-to-wall coverage for you on PackersNews.com. So make sure to stay tuned for that. Guys, before we say goodbye, Pete, we don't do this on After Final Review, so I'm excited you get to be a part of it. Take 60 final seconds to address any topic in the world you would like to. Ryan, I'll let you go first because I know what you're going to talk about. I know you got it locked and loaded.
You know what? I'm going to not take the bait of the New York Mets, and I am going to give a travel pitch for Phoenix. Not only warm, yeah, but if anyone's ever got, if you got a trip planned to Phoenix, you're looking for things to do. One of my, I'm fortunate. I get to travel a lot. We all do. And I like to go out and get experiences. One of my favorite experiences is Camelback Mountain in Phoenix. It's a rigorous hike up a mountain with an unbelievable view waiting for you. But it is one of my favorite things I've been able to do. I do it every time. I did it twice in Phoenix this past week. There's two trails, and I did one of each. I cannot recommend it enough. The views are amazing. The climbing, it's just an incredible experience. And Pete, next time we're in Phoenix together, I'm getting you on Camelback Mountain.
Pete, you didn't take the hike?
No, I got an earlier flight home.
That's so Pete, yep. Each their own.
Pete has a radius around the airport that he'll stay in. He does not go out from that radius.
So, okay, then I'll use my 60 seconds to defend myself on that. You know, I used to be more fun than both of you guys put together.
You're still fun, Pete.
I ask Rob Domofsky. I used to be a lot of fun. And what you have no way of knowing, and you can't know, and I didn't know at your age, and you can't know until you experience it, is what getting old does to you. And I noticed a huge difference starting around mid-50s, maybe a hair before that, that just the stamina's not there for going out. I just can't go out before the night before games, or definitely can't stay out late. Travel gets really old after 30 years of it. And you get to a point where all you, like, you realize you cover the game Sunday. Monday, you got to get back and work. So you want to be as close as you can to the airport so you can sleep as late as you can and still make your flight and then get back and work. And I will bet anything, and I won't be around to see it, but I will be crowing from above or below that when you are old codgers and you're cashing it in early the night before games and you're staying out by the airport, because it's such a travel is such a hassle, and you want a little extra sleep, and getting to the airport is a chore in and of itself, and all of those things, I will be cackling.
Pete, in my 9 years that we've worked together, there has been plenty of crowing that you have been able to have on my expense, because
we'll just add this to the list.
Yeah, we've had this. I told you so from you. And you always do, and you're always right. You are always right, Pete. I'll give you that. So, yes, I have no doubt that when I get to that place, there will be crowing. Now, before then, until then, Camelback Mountain.
There we go.
I'll be long gone. I just want you guys to remember that. I want you to remember this conversation when that's become what you've been reduced to.
Pete, will we go to the Raiders game this year? Will you go to the Strip?
Uh-huh. Yes, he is. Yes. I can answer for Pete.
Yeah, I think I need to, because I've never been before. So, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's fun. I'll take you to the Bellagio fountains. That's fun. Yep.
Is that where the big heist was?
Yes, where George Clooney stole all the money.
Yeah, okay.
And this worked.
He did that like three times. So
do what?
Or were they all at the Bellagio?
Well, he stole from three casinos, but it was under the Bellagio.
Yeah, because there's three movies, so.
Right, but the second one they stole something from Rome, and the third one they went back to Vegas and stole from a new casino that's not actually there. But then the first one, it was actually from the Bellagio.
I know I've watched big chunks of all of them, but I don't know the details. But I do remember the name Bellagio.
This works in your favor because in Vegas, the airport is on the strip. Like, you land at the airport, and if you stay in a hotel right around the airport, you're already on the strip.
Oh, that works out perfect.
Yes.
Do they have a hotel in the airport?
I don't know. Not every city can be Detroit, Pete.
That would be striking gold.
This is one area that Pete and I actually do overlap. You stay by the airport. That's key.
Well, it works out for you in Vegas. The airport's right there on the strip. So anyways, that's down the road. We'll get to that. Guys, thank you for your time as always. Pete, thank you for joining us on this episode.
Well, it was an honor and a privilege.
I can tell you really mean that. As I said, whenever details do get finalized in an Aaron Rodgers trade, we will have full coverage for you on PackersNews.com and a lot of exciting things planned to look back over his illustrious career. Guys, thank you as always. This has been the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and Packers News.